Session number 7257.
Mr. Lane, tape 4. Going back to this sort of Christmas day in the trenches and the merrymaking of the Germans, was there a lot of sort of singing and music going on in the trenches?
Not in the trenches. You never heard, you rarely heard any singing in the trenches. For one thing, very often the trenches were so close that any noise at all would attract German retaliation or German shells or bombs, you see. You had to be very quiet in most cases. But the only singing was really on the march. And then it was most often parodies of songs that were sung at home, you see. Now, one song that we never sang, at any rate, not the words, was It's a Long Way to Tipperary. We sang other words to that tune. At that time, we spent a year or more in one area of France, in which we had to make a march from the rest position to the trenches along what was called the La Bassée Road. So naturally there was a song about the old La Bassée Road. Now I've got to remember it. And the song was, "It's a long way up to the trenches, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to the trenches up the old La Bassée Road. When you get in the trenches, on sentry you must go. If you don't keep your head below the parapet, I'll say where red you go." It's a fairly mild one, really. Another one was when I was a member of the 4th Guards Brigade Bombing Company. And we had a song which was to the tune, I believe, of a song called Sons of the Sea. And the song went like this. "Boys of the Guards Brigade, all British born, bombing o'er the craters, laughing Huns to scorn. They may throw their bombs at us, we can dodge the bits, but they can't put the wind up the Guards Brigade, who put the wind up Fritz." Something like that it was. Of course, it was only Whistling in the Dark. I mean, you mustn't think that the Germans were afraid of us or anything like that. It was just Whistling in the Dark, really. And they were all sung out of the line when you were having a pint of beer, probably, or marching up to the hill away from the line. But I remember that one.
It's interesting because it seems that they were original. You used your own words.
Yes, I don't know where they came from. I never made up a song. I don't remember ever doing one. But there were many more. Of course, you'll probably find other. Well, then you won't find anybody, many people of my age about now, will you? Not. Who was an infant, a front-line infantryman, you won't find many alive, will you?
Did you ever read any of the war poets when you came back?
Well, I read war books. Now, I'll tell you one book that shared some of the experience that I shared. That was Robert Gray's Goodbye to All That. Have you read it? Well, now, he was an officer in the 2nd Battalion, the Royal Welsh Fusiliers. And the Royal Welsh Fusiliers were in a brigade of the 2nd Division of the British Army, which was a division the 4th Guards Brigade were on. And we continued in that division after the 4th Guards Brigade left the division. And they put the 19th Brigade, included the 2nd Battalion, the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, into the 2nd Division to make up for the loss of the 4th Guards Brigade. And so, for a period, the experiences mentioned in Goodbye to All That were similar to the experiences that we had in our battalion. Now that brings me to an incident. In the Kaiser's birthday, you don't know what his birthday was, do you? I think it was in the month of January. Well, on the Kaiser's birthday 1915, we were holding the position at Givenchy, which was then almost the right of the British line, in other words, to the right of the 4th Guards Brigade, the French army. And during that, the Kaiser's birthday 1914, or during the night rather, the Germans made a heavy attack at Givenchy, which was a very important position because it was high ground surrounded by an area of very flat earth, really the Flanders Plain, I suppose you'd call it. And therefore, it dominated the whole area. And apart from that, of course, junction with the French army made it a very important position. Well, on the Kaiser's birthday 1914, during the night, the Germans made a heavy attack on a fairly narrow position held by the Royal Welsh Fusiliers. They penetrated the front line and they got right down to the support line. I don't know exactly what happened, but I suppose they took a lot of prisoners. They certainly killed and wounded a lot of men. We were in that same position in January 1916. And one incident I remember, I was on sentry, and during the time I was on sentry, the general of the division, and I think his name was Daly, came along the trench, and said, "We've got to be careful about the Kaiser's birthday." Well, that was either the next day or a day or two later. And I said, "But I've been told, or I'd read, that the Kaiser had ordered no celebration on that occasion." That was his second. That was the birthday of 1915. And General Day replied, "Ha, but he might regard it as solemn. But the Germans might regard it as a solemn commemoration." I thought that was a very apt reply. I can remember those words quite well. And in fact, nothing happened. Of course, he didn't make another attack. So that was the end of that. Well, now, shall I? We were on about songs, weren't we? No, I can't think of any. Well, you know, the Tipperary, I can't remember much of Tipperary being sung at all. But the Long, Long Trail was one. You know, that sort of mournful, melancholy, long, long trail of whining, that was sung quite a lot. When we're out of the line, but never in the trenches. You never sang in the trenches. And in fact, you had to be damn careful not to make a noise, because if you did, you'd very often attract an enemy bomb.
Did you ever have any entertainment laid on when you were back, you know, on leave?
When we went back to rest, that's what we used to call it. Baytune was a lovely old town. Baytune was our paradise, really, but we got there very... Well, I suppose in 1915, we held a line not far from Baytune during the whole of 1915 and for part of 1916. But for a time, but only a short time, after 16 days in the line or just behind the line, we would be entitled to perhaps a week at Baytune. and there we would occupy either L'École des Jeunes Filles, that's a girls' school, or what we call the cavalry barracks. Well, L'École des Jeunes Filles was a fairly new building, and it was most comfortable. Of course, we'd slept on the, we had no beds or anything of that sort, but it was clean, there were no rats, and it was comfortable. And the Germans never shelled it, as far as I can remember. And that was our period of rest would be about 7 or 8 days, you see, then back to the line we go.
And now, did you have these concert parties? Did they ever lay
well,
on?
Well, not till about, I don't think, no, we had a concert, I think it must have been 1915, made up by people from the division, you know, men who'd got some experience on the stage or locally, that sort of, men who were capable of entertaining people, you see. We had it at a sort of theatre, I remember. But the Givenchy, which was only just behind the line, when we were in support, I suppose you'd call it, I can remember a concert in some sort of hall they had, or some sort of building, barn, I suppose, where we were in rifle range anyway. But we had this hill where the front line was in front of us so that the Germans were firing over the hill sort of thing. And we had a concert, well, if you can call it a concert, where Colonel Pagecroft sang a song called Shilling a Day, one of Kipling's, you know, one of Kipling's. Oh, Shilling a Day, bloody good pay, or something of that sort, and lucky to get it, lucky to touch it, Shilling a Day. He sang us that song, and one or two of our men who had some sort of singing capability sang one or two songs. And then coming from that concert to our, where we were billeted, which was only in ruins really, because in dugouts really, the Germans would every now and again fire bursts of machine gun fire. And we had, coming home from that concert, we had 3 men wounded coming back from that. We only had to come about 200 yards. And we used to play football there. I remember we started playing football there. There was a bit of open ground there. And we were playing there, and these bullets coming across, you see. They were only spent bullets, but of course they could, I mean, they couldn't, well, I suppose they could have reached in the right place. But anyway, we were forbidden to do that. And we were forbidden to play football for another reason. That was because people get injured playing football. Well, we mustn't get injured because we were wanted for attacks on the German trenches and that sort of thing. That was a sort of a satire, really, wasn't it? I mean, you mustn't get injured playing football. It was funny, really.
Did that cause much resentment?
No, that's what I want to make clear. That although we used to grouse and grumble, there was never any real resentment. There was total acceptance of everything that happened. I never heard anybody, well, I'm going to say grumble. We used to grumble and grouse and that sort of thing, but amongst ourselves, but nothing like approaching higher commands and that, nothing at all, never.
You never questioned the strategy of the war?
Oh, no, we had no say in that. Well, there wasn't any strategy anyway. We were like, well, I suppose the Germans were to some extent too, but there was no strategy. I mean, it was simply a case of driving sheep to the slaughter. That's all it was, really. That's all it was, because, I mean, you take it in the first 1915, the Battle of Neuve-Chapelle. We were in reserve for that. This started on the 10th of March 1915 dawn. There again, all we had a lot of them, mind you, 18 pounders. Now, 18 pounders are all right if troops are in the open. But against German trenches, they did batter down the first line or two, but they were no good at all, really. Well, we were in reserve, and we were out of the line at a place called Hinges, H-I-N-G-E-S. And we were told that we were in support, and the main attack was carried out by the 7th Division, a very fine division. And our job apparently was that if the attack was really successful, we were to get through and go on, you see. So for 3 or 4 days, every morning at dawn, we'd be up, or before dawn, and march nearer to the line. But of course, although the Battle of Neuve-Chapelle, they did advance and take a few hundred yards, perhaps a mile or so, they never broke through, you see. So we were never called on to do anything except to be there ready in case where they did break through. And I can remember going up to the line after the Battle of Neuve-Chapelle was over, because not only at Neuve-Chapelle, but in front of Givenchy, an attack was made by our division in support of the Neuve-Chapelle advance. And I can remember going up to take over the front line, our battalion. And all I could hear was the screams of wounded men out in no man's land. Now, they'd been on the same day that the attack on Neuve-Chapelle had taken place, they'd gone over the top in front of Givenchy. They hadn't got even to the German barbed wire, no further than the German barbed wire, and they were all cut down by it. That was the 1st Battalion of the King's Royal Rifle Corps, if I remember, either the 1st or 2nd. And they were in the 5th Brigade of the 2nd Division. And some of our people got these wounded men in during the night, you see. And that was the last that we heard of the Battle of Neuve-Chapelle.
Was that very upsetting for you, you know, to witness that sort of thing, or did you get used to it?
You'd be surprised now. Human beings can get very sceptical about human nature. They can get used to anything. You'd be surprised. Do you know that we hadn't been out there very long in this non-Russian wood? And I told you we were wandering around there. Well, some of our men were wandering around, and there's a lot of Prussian garden, well, quite a few dead, huge Prussian gardens lying about. They'd been killed just before. Do you know how some of our men were cutting their fingers off to get the rings off hands? I'm not saying that everybody's like that. I'd never do it. And I should say that only 10% of them. There are a certain type of human being, I don't know how, in what proportion, I hope not very great, would stoop to anything. They'd stoop to anything. But I will say this, that I never saw this done. But I have seen this. Is this being taken down? Oh, I mustn't go on with this.
Oh, yes, please. This is very interesting.
To discredit of a regiment, I can't do that.
Oh, well, that's all.
I'm discrediting.
You needn't mention who it was.
Well, I have seen English soldiers behave in a barbaric way. Not very often, very rarely. Only once or twice. But on one occasion, there had been a night attack. The British troops had gone along a sunken roadway in which as usual, a number of dugouts were built. They had thrown bombs into these dugouts, which was quite in keeping with normal procedure, only to be expected. We had carried on. They had reached about 200 or 300 yards from the dugouts, and there, in an old German trench, they stayed. When dawn broke, or soon after dawn broke the next morning, two German soldiers who had escaped the devastation of the bombing emerged from the dugouts and started walking towards the British line. And what happened? One or two British soldiers fired at them. They got their hands up. They knew they were prisoners. Eventually, they were both killed. And now that was 6 or 7 hours after that battle was over. They were both killed. You can just imagine these poor devils of Germans marching towards, or going towards the German lines, or the British lines with their hands up, and being fired at, and they had to fire at them 2 or 3 times. I thought that was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. It's been on my mind ever since. Well, not ever since, but I've thought of it from time to time.
Did things like that happen in reverse? You know,
yes,
did the Germans
do it? And all this rubbish. I mean, I'm not. I mean, I know that anybody could do anything, but not like that. Now, you take the German soldiers. They were the Daily Mail was the culprit, really. It used to run down the German troops as hateful villains and barbarians. And that sort of thing. And yet, I'm talking about the Somme now, or it happened earlier than that. Every time we advanced, we captured prisoners, a number of German prisoners would immediately take up stretcher duty in a most dangerous area. The shells were still coming over, and they'd take home men. Now, I'm sure the Geneva Convention never required them to do that. And that happened every time.
And they would do it for British troops.
They'd do it for, they'd just do it. That's all they'd do it. For humanitarian reasons. I don't know, they did it. It may be that they thought they were going to gain something by it, but they did it. I saw a funny thing happen, talking about that. We were going, making an attack, and we were marching up a road. The Americans were out there then. And there was several American soldiers bringing down about 20 or 30 German prisoners, you see. And the shells started coming over. They were landing about. When you got out, you probably got to be out there 3 or 4 months and you knew just where a shell was going to land. And these Americans were raw, young. They were sort of new to the FA, you see. They were supposed to be guarding the German prisoners. The American sentries who were guarding the German prisoners immediately lay flat down on the ground, and there was a German soldier standing there looking down in the utmost contempt. You were supposed to be guarding the German prisoners. But you can understand the Americans because they were evidently new to it, you see. These shells are falling about 50 or 60 yards, 100 yards away perhaps. And we were going up. That's the sort of thing that happened, you see.
You sound as if you have a great deal of respect for the German soldiers.
I've got the greatest respect for them, and any British infantryman would have the greatest respect for them, but you mustn't say it in England. Well, not now. You couldn't say it then. Oh, God, no. You mustn't. If you did, you'd be... Do you know, when our chaps went on leave... This was funny, really. About 1915, I suppose. When he came back, he said, "Do you know what they asked me? What they said to me?" I said, "No." He said, "They said, you must be tired of killing soldiers all day long, every day, and killing Germans." He'd never seen a German soldier. That was the British idea, and it was going in with the bayonet. See, that was another thing. The bayonet wasn't used there that way until never. Oh, a lot of rubbish. And you mustn't say that. And you, even now, you, in fact, it's stupid to say you were in the war, really. Other people, they ask me, well, if they knew I was in the war, why did you do it? Why did, what a rubbish. Oh, dear, it makes me mad. Why did you stay there? Well, I don't know. This nationalism, when it gets a hold, it's really astonishing. Although I agree with it, mind you, it said everybody else has got it, so we've got to have it, I suppose. But there it was.
Do you think the civilians back home, that they had any real idea what
no
it was
like? No idea at all. Nobody, that had, and don't always remember this, that it was only the infantry that really knew what the war was like. Only the infantry. Because they were the only people between the Germans, who faced the Germans with nothing in between, you see. Once you got behind the line, even about a couple of miles, you were in, you got a shell, you weren't safe, but you got a shell over and over, and you couldn't come out. The infantryman was the only man that knew what was going on, really, in the war. You've got to bear that in mind. And the next people would be the Royal Field Artillery, the Field Artillery, because they were shelled quite a lot. But it's not difficult to imagine that you're there and the Germans are there. Perhaps only as much as 25 yards away sometimes. And you're under attack, you're under sniper attack. Well, possibly. At night, you've got to go out and do the barbed wire. You've got to go out on listening patrol. Lie there. Now, that's all right, lying there, because, you know, if you're lying there, you're all right. Except that it might be snowing or raining heavily, and you lie there for 2 hours sometimes on listening patrol. But the infantryman's the only man that now our people. I worked in the post office, you see. And, of course, there were very few of them. They all went in. They got to know about this infantry business. They all went to the Royal Signal School, the Royal Engineers, you see. I might just as well talk, you know as much about the war really as they do. They'd seen the devastation and all that sort of thing, but people have seen it in London. The infantryman was the only person who really could tell you anything about the Great War.
And that was because of the contact?
Because he was in the danger area all the time. Not only he was in physical danger, he was facing the enemy, he was up against them. He was under rifle fire, he was under bomb fire, he was under mortar fire, which was a devastating.